This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking. Your prison is walking through this world all alone.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Raylene and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
I'm Rebecca, I'm an alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. We've already heard Rebecca. Would you just like to introduce yourself and give us a quick outline of you know, your life, where your age and family, occupation?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in my mid-40s. I'm married. I have a teenage daughter who is 16, and I work in finance.
And how long sober have you been?
24 years.
Great. So when did you start drinking and how did it progress?
Well, technically, my first drink was at the age of 6 years, and I discovered a bottle of perfume that must have been laying around home, and that was actually my first drink. And the relief that it gave me for the way that I felt was just immense. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, why did you drink and what did alcohol do for you? You just said that, but when you got on to drinking, you know, and how did you drink, socially or alone? And did you feel it was a problem? Try to stop?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things for me is that from an early age, I always felt that I didn't fit in. And I always had that sense of unease. I didn't feel like anywhere that I went that I fitted in, not even with my own family. And, you know, alcoholism is a strong feature in my family. It has left its scars and its marks with my siblings and myself, obviously. So that drinking for me, it was like medication. It just took all of that away. It was escaping from anything to do with life. I didn't like it, you know, and there were some pretty serious things going on for me as a young person within my family, and that seemed like the only solution. Nothing else seemed to work. Yeah.
Okay. So later on, how did you drink? You know, did you socially binging or alone on your own?
I always laugh when I hear the word social drinking, because I actually don't know what that is. So my drinking was alcoholic right from the start. And so I didn't understand people that for whom alcohol was not a big factor in their life. They didn't have the obsession of mind or the phenomena of craving. I didn't understand. I didn't understand people that just had one drink, because that's not what I did. I drank to get drunk, and I drank to escape.
Mm. So did you ever feel it was a problem or try to stop?
Interestingly, I knew I had problems, and I knew that I was inept at dealing with life, but it took me a long time to make the connection between my drinking and my alcoholism and the way that I was. And so, yeah, because when you meet my family, they're really a bit on edge, and it's very easy to point the finger at them that they're the issue. And that's certainly what I did, even though in my darkest moment in coming to AA was I didn't want to drink, I didn't want to not drink, I didn't want to live, and I didn't want to die. And so having got to that point, I went, oh, okay, well, I'll go to Al-Anon. So, you know, there goes the denial, you know. It's like I just had that pretty intense thought and feeling, but I struggled to make that connection, and it took a while, and it took a few Al-Anon meetings before an Al-Anon member pointed out that perhaps I might want to give AA a try. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So then what made you realise you needed help? You know, describe your rock bottom.
Yeah. So I left home after seventh form, whatever that is. these days, and I thought I'd go to university. I'll come to Christchurch, and so I often say that was like letting a child out. You know, I wasn't a young adult. I had no life skills, really. I got by. I was academically quite smart, but you couldn't say that I was street smart in any way. And so I went to university and, you know, scraped through that first year and had a boyfriend and all that sort of thing. And then the wheels started to fall off in the second year, and I couldn't work out why. And I started to isolate. I started to separate myself from my friends. I had a flatting situation that, you know, I look back on it now and it's just a normal everyday life situation, but I couldn't handle it. I had this random flatmate that was winding everybody up, and you know, and I didn't know how to deal with that. I didn't know how to deal with paying bills, let alone running a flat. So and by that time my drinking, you know, it certainly was a binge drinker, but those binges were pretty big, and they were quite destructive to me emotionally, physically and spiritually. So I was absolutely worn out. I was run down, and you know, I didn't, you know, I actually felt quite suicidal. And so that's when I knew all I knew was to go home. And so it was at that point that I started my journey, because it was a pretty horrible place to be. And I'd realised that I'd, you know, as a kid I was a pretty you know, kind and considerate, you know, thought about others person, and I could see that I turned into this person that thought the world owed me a living, and I was very self-centred, and I think that's what got me. It was like, that was I call it a God moment, because for me to have that much insight about myself is actually quite a miracle. So I just knew something wasn't right, and I felt really, I didn't want to be here, and that's not right. That's not a, you know, I've got to do something about that. Yeah.
So how did you find your way to your first AA meeting, and what was it like?
Right. So after hanging out in Al-Anon and actually feeling like I didn't fit in, and then that person making that suggestion that I might want to try AA, I got picked up to go to a meeting, and it was actually Waikiki South, and it was the best meeting for me, because I am somebody that at that time I had the answers for everything. You know, I knew everything, and at that meeting at that time, it was quite a big meeting. You needed to sit down, shut up and listen, and it was perfect. And I was told by the person that took me to that meeting, and she's still sober today, you know, to look for the similarities, not the differences. And that's really important, because I was quite young. I was only 20 when I came into AA, and so a lot of the people that I saw at that time were a lot older than me, probably twice my age. And that was important. And the other thing that was told to me was that I had a lot of yets, and that's true. You know, I hadn't been DIC'd yet. I hadn't been divorced yet. You know, I hadn't had a lot of responsibility either. So, you know, yeah.
So how did you feel? Like, did you feel welcome? Were you anxious and hopeful when you went to your meeting?
I felt quite welcome, yeah. And that made a difference, because I didn't trust anyone, and I didn't know how to be honest with myself and my feelings and thoughts and emotions, and to just see people that were quite open and honest about who and what they are, and honest if they'd gone out and had a slip. You know, all that sort of thing, and there was no judgment, and that was important to me at that time.
Yeah, good. So how have you managed to stay sober? Describe your process of recovery.
I guess there's no magic to it, really. It's following the 12-step program, and for me, the longer sober I am, the more I have to do those things. So, you know, that's following a few spiritual principles. And just to make it clear, you know, it's whatever that is for people. They have, you know, we all from different backgrounds and different ideas. You know, I go to meetings. I go to regular meetings. I have a sponsor. And that's important to me. I've got to have somebody that I can be honest with and connect with and talk about whatever it is that is going on. So that's what keeps me sober, and above all else, it's not just the sobriety, it's actually I get to be a member of society. I get to live a life that, you know, the odds were against me for actually having.
Mm-hmm. So you've touched on it, but how did or do you cope with the difficulties you've talked about? You know, talking to your sponsor, but yeah. What other ways do you deal with it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have actually had quite a few situations in my sobriety that, you know, are pretty traumatic, you know. You know, I have lost 2 children in sobriety, you know, all kinds of things that happen to everybody as well. And my faith has got me through, and it's AA that has got me through those times. And I found that faith in AA, because, you know, things happen in life and I'm not immune to that. It's my response to those things that can sometimes be a bit alcoholic. And I know that, you know, it's something that's within me. As they say, the disease comes in people, not in bottles. And, that's, you know, and there is those moments in the day when I stop and reflect, and sometimes I'll do something that I think, don't know if that was quite right, you know. And it's those of us that are in AA that get to stop, reflect and think and learn how to apologise if you are in the wrong and all that sort of thing. And also at the same time, because of some of the issues that I've grown up with, I've had to seek outside help as well, you know, because those things can't be dealt with in AA, and that's okay. Yeah.
Good. So how important has service been as part of your recovery?
Very, very important. Recently, I was lucky enough to use my skills with an area assembly that was held. So I was very, very grateful for that opportunity, because, you know, I got to stay sober again through that process and really felt like I was of use. I also sponsor other women in AA, and that's important to me. I learn more from them than they probably do from me. And that is a privilege more than anything else. So, you know, I've been the service centre coordinator. I've done lots of things. And even, you know, latterly, you know, I prefer to do the simple things, which is set up a meeting, you know, put the chairs out, say hello to the newcomer. It's all part of getting out of myself and out of my head, and that's the biggest treatment for this disease. Yeah.
Good. So how would you describe yourself and the life you have today? You know, how do you feel within yourself? How's your life changed since becoming sober?
It's hard to say. You know, I think if I hadn't been aware of AA, then my life would have been on quite a different trajectory. I think I would have been a political upstart. I think I might be quite sick right now. Questionable as to whether I'd be here, but my life today is very busy. There's lots that goes on. I have my own business, and that's a challenge in itself. I would never have thought any of those things were possible. I've actually been married for 20-odd years, or 21 years. So that's a miracle, because I'm not the easiest person to live with. Yeah, so, yeah, and it's just a privilege to actually be present in my daughter's life, and we have quite a close relationship. She can tell me anything, and, you know, as anyone knows that has teenagers or has had them, that's really important, yeah. Yeah.
So how have your relationships with your friends and family changed in sobriety?
Yeah, that's another thing too, like the family dynamics. You know, I'm one of six, and my father is still alive, and he's in his 80s, and so we have some really interesting family dynamics, and I'm at peace with the fact that some of my family are not well and others of us are. And so I don't feel so enmeshed with my family of origin. There is that degree of separation, and that's important to me. Friends is tricky. You know, my school friends that I hung out with, we have all, in one way or another, have issues. And that's something, you know, they weren't around when I got sober. So that's just the way it is. I have kept in touch with some of them. And yeah, the way I make friends is very different to how I might have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but still, yeah, it's hard to say what it would have been like. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would you suggest for any listeners that think they may have a drinking problem?
There's that idea, and I think it's a good one, that if you think you've got a problem with it, think about how you've tried to control your drinking, because if you're trying to control it, that means you've got an issue. People that don't need to control their drinking don't have an issue. So even it may be with a hangover or whatever, but try it. Try and go to a bar and just have one drink. And most people won't need to try that to know that that's an issue. They just the idea of it would probably drive them crazy like it did me. Yeah.
So AA is described as a spiritual program. So what does spirituality mean to you?
Spirituality means being connected with other people and having that relationship with others. The opposite of that is being disconnected.
Yeah, great. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thanks, Riley.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with a serenity prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy? She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking. Your prison is walking through this world all alone. Don't your feet get cold in the wintertime? The sky won't snow and the sun won't shine. It's hard to tell the nighttime from the